in economics, there's a thing called a long tail. So, you know, the tail that comes and gets you after a long period of time that you don't necessarily foresee. And what happened is we built this system and we thought it was pretty efficient and robust. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'd raise and lower interest rates, and the central banks didn't notice that all the industrial economy had basically died. And so there's only so far you can take that. You can borrow money and serve cups of coffee to each other, you know, for a certain amount of period, you know, 20, 25, 30 years. You can inflate assets if you want. But at the end of the day, you know, it's like a nil-sum game eventually. You can't do it forever. You've got to make things. This idea that we don't have to make things is there with, you know, the South Sea bubble and tulips. The people who don't make things can remain free and make their own decisions is nonsense. We've got to make things. You know, we lionized Zuckerberg and Jobs and people who made devices to take our attention. And, you know, there's a whole list of, and I've talked to most of them, the whole list of inventors that never got any credit for creating, you know, very unique industrial innovation, but they could never get it financed because we weren't interested in that. We're interested in our attention deficit disorder and looking at screens all the time and TikTok. And, you know, we all do it. You know, that's no judgment, but the reality is it has a consequence. And the consequence is that you can't, you know, you eventually run out of runway and you can't fly the plane anymore. You have to sit on the ground. And so what the Americans are trying to do, and, you know, I think the Americans are probably alone at the moment in trying to do it. The Japanese certainly didn't deindustrialize as much. But the Europeans certainly have. You know, I've got figures for the European economy and even the Indian economy. They decided they were going to rely on China for everything and just import things. And so, you know, where are you going to get your jobs? Where are you going to really run the economy? And that's the answer to your question. We ran out of runway. That's, you know, we got to the point where the Americans realized that they could be attacked and they couldn't defend themselves because they couldn't replace their F-35s. They couldn't, you know, McDonnell Douglas, the CEO, made a great speech about how he couldn't exist as a defense supplier without Chinese supply lines. And, he's earning $24 million a year, and you think to yourself, for $24 million a year, you couldn't work out that if you got supplied by China, you might have to fight them. And it creates incentives. Everybody tries to see it through a moral lens. If you have a weakened U.S. Military, that creates incentives for the Chinese to take advantage of it and for its rivals to take advantage. And so it's not equal.
I mean, that's a great way to frame it. You know, I think in the end, it's not so much that China will at some point be so strong that they will take over the entire world and maybe even attack the U.S. outright. You know, that's maybe that happens. We don't know. But it's really happening at the margins, you know, and it's more subtle in the sense of that they can then start kind of exerting that force in their region. And the U.S. can't just really do anything about it because at some point, as you said, you know, their capacity to take action is just going to be limited because China has all the control over the really foundational base metals and rare earth and everything that goes into doing actual stuff. And that's kind of the risk. And then with Europe as well, it's just that we lose, the ability to have an industry which still sort of provides jobs and stuff. And at the margin, this just nags away, you know, at the ability of just catering to your people then as well. And that's why then maybe a welfare state has to be blown out of proportion to kind of help along, and government grows. And we all know that might not be the solution in the end, you know. So that's sort of all these downstream effects of what's happening here. My question would be, like you said it as well, like U.S. people, some of the experts do understand it. But what about other political leaders and experts, you know, in the West? Do they understand this? And you said the other risk is, like, if Trump is away in 2 years, there might be somebody else coming along who still wants to play this game of, yeah, we want to go back to the old system where we are the financial power and we outsource everything. And I mean, there's a real risk. People will try to kick the can down the road, because I feel like from what I can tell, not a lot of people, even political leaders, do seem to see that risk, you know? Or are we starting to see the dominoes fall? What is your impression? Like,
I think we could go back. That's certainly a theory. And I have lots of colleagues that think that, you know, they lose the midterms and all of a sudden Trump is emancipated and you know, they try and kick him out. You know, personally, I don't think Trump is going to go to an election. I think the reality is he's probably going to hold the presidency right through to the midterms. Sorry, past the midterms to the end of his situation. You know, there's a lot of conflict going on in the US system over political fairness without, you know, taking sides. You know, there's proof on both sides that, you know, something or other is going on. And, you know, Trump's trying to put through some legislation that basically says you have to be able to ID yourself before you vote. Now, you know, I'm not sure he's going to get that through, but you can't, it's not hard to imagine a midterm election where he rings every polling booth with, you know, ICE agents to check IDs to scare everyone, all the people that might not be in the country legal, make him elite, you know. And there's all kinds of disruptions that could potentially happen there. I think this is just the reality of where we are. We've got an area of scarcity. You know, you imagine the situation with data centers. You know, I don't know how many of us have watched these AI gurus talk about, you know, the future of AI, and they're going to replace us all, and you know, they're going to build these and they're going to do that. Well, you know, it's all part of the digital era. You know, the error in that they haven't got the materials to do it anyway. All these alternative energy things, right? Wind power, solar. No one ever checked if the bill of materials was capable of being drawn from our resource bank. Like, I know some of the world luminaries in mining, and so I talk to them regularly. And I've done heaps of research. If you look back on my, you know, return of matter and stuff like that, we need about 6 major copper mines to open per year to build out this AI vision that everyone's got and this alternative energy vision. And we're not going to build 6 a year. We'd be lucky to build 1. And so we haven't got enough copper. We haven't got enough lead. We haven't got enough silver. We haven't got enough anything. And guess what? China controls it. So if anyone's going to build it, they're going to build it. And they haven't got enough either. And so the world is kind of like in this little fantasy land where you can measurably look at the supply and go, okay, you know, it's like building a house. Do you have the materials to build a house? You count them out. You look at all the bricks and mortar and all that kind of stuff. You can work out if you build a house. They haven't done that first principle stuff for AI or green energy. And so we've got this assumption that we're going to build this thing out and it's all going to happen. But that comes from our conditioning with respect to, you know, having abundance of everything. Our conditioning is telling us that that's not a problem. It's just money and finance and policy, and that's all we have to do. It's classic EU thinking from the technocrats, is that they just decide what they're going to do. They don't even work out if it's possible. And as it turns out, it's not possible. It's not possible. And people don't believe that when I tell them. I've done like the best work, some of the best work on the world in supply chains for critical minerals. And I'll give you an example: tantalum. Tantalum is going to be used by NVIDIA and AMD to build their new chips. I think it's the Rivkin chip, the Ultra Rivkin, and there's another one that's named after a mathematician. So what I did is I went down and looked at all their build reports, you know, the stuff that described, you know, the hardware that they were building, and then I did a bottom-up estimate. Now, we at the moment produce about 850 ton of tantalum per year for the whole world. And NVIDIA by 2028 will be using about 850 ton of tantalum. That's one company. So we need to expand tantalum. That's a rare earth for people that don't know it. It's used to isolate electricity. We have to build out tantalum supplies by five times, and we're just not going to do it. So all of these stuff that you hear about them building and the robots and the it's just not going to happen. It's going to hit a wall, and we're already seeing reports of that in the US market where they're canceling data centers. But people won't believe it.